Maybe, first of all, we should just allude to a certain metaphor that you brought forward. Basically, we're facing a crisis situation, and you made reference to the Titanic. Faced with a sinking ship, there are three groups of people you're likely to run into. The people who are in the deer in the headlights, freaking out, they don't know what to do. There are those who are busy making the lifeboats, and then there are those who want to go to the bar get a stiff drink because the boat is unsinkable.
Yes.
It occurs to me that there's probably a fourth group. Maybe you could call them traditional activists, people who are trying to lobby the skipper to slow down and change course, or mm-hmm. working with the crew to try to fix the boat, or maybe some of them are in the bar handing out DVD copies of The Iceberg Conspiracy or something like that.
Very good.
There are people who get peak oil, but then they don't get peak oil. So maybe you could just go through some of the critical facts that people really need to know to really get their minds around the dimensions of this problem.
Well, first let's define the Titanic. And the Titanic is human industrial civilization. That's what's sinking. That is what cannot be prevented or stopped. And that's because of the fact of peak oil. Basically, very simply, peak oil is a point in the, all oil production follows a bell curve. It's the point where you reach the top of the bell curve, and after which, no matter how much money, energy, technology, wishful thinking, animal sacrifice, whatever you want to throw at it, nothing is going to increase the amount of oil that is produced. Once you're on the downslope, you're on the downslope. Now, the problem with that is that people really do not understand how important oil is throughout our civilization. It's not just what we put in a car. There's 7 gallons of oil in every tire. All plastics are made from oil, paints, resins. But most importantly, aside from what everybody thinks about, all pesticides are made from oil. And all fertilizers, commercial fertilizers, are made from natural gas, which is a chemical cousin to oil. And food is moved by oil. We drive oil-powered machines to plow, plant, fertilize. We burn oil, natural gas, and coal to generate electricity to irrigate. We drive more oil-powered machines to harvest, to process, to transport the food. Then we ship it all around the world, wasting more oil to the point where there are 10 calories of hydrocarbon energy, mostly oil, in every calorie of food we consume on the planet. Our food production is predicated upon oil. Human population has just hit a rocket ship afterburner since oil first started to be used around the beginning of the 1900s. And human population has added like 5 billion to its numbers since then, and every one of those souls is here only because we use oil. But the oil now is depleting and diminishing rapidly, and we have done nothing to replace it, and there is nothing anywhere. There is no combination of alternative energies that will replace what oil does for food and for our transportation.
What percentage of our transportation is due to oil alone? I mean,
90%.
90%. Talk about, you know, alternatives about hydrogen, biofuels.
Hydrogen is a lie. Hydrogen is an absolute joke. Mm-hmm. It will never happen. That is a marketing gimmick that's been put forward to keep everybody consuming like they were. It takes roughly 3,000 gallons of gaseous hydrogen to give you the same energy in a gallon of gasoline.
You talk about in the book about the three laws of thermodynamics, and particularly the second law of thermodynamics, which is that energy always goes from usable to unusable, that every time you transform from one energy source to another, there's a net loss of energy. No matter how you try to squeeze it, basically you have to go as directly from an energy source as possible, like oil and natural gas, which is pretty much available for free.
Yes. Well, natural gas is not available for free, no. Natural gas is getting harder and harder to find in much of the world, especially the United States, is now trying to use what's called shale gas, which is a tremendously expensive process involving poisonous chemicals, consuming massive amounts of fresh water, and it also is, according to some experts like Matthew Simmons, the world's largest energy investment banker, a net energy loser, meaning that it takes more energy to get the natural gas than you get from burning it. There is no free energy anywhere.
But natural gas is very much coveted by the United States right now for electrical production, and as you mentioned, for food production.
Right.
when you look at the Canadian situation, we have this big beast in Alberta known as the tar sands. We're seeing natural gas being burned up and exploited in order to produce this poor quality tar sands oil. And putting aside the environmental and human cost to tar sands exploitation, this is a very, it seems to me, a very wasteful process. So could you explain why, but what is the rationality behind essentially turning gold into lead?
Good question and well phrased. I like that. First of all, I'm impressed with that. That was very good. What it proves is that there is no more easy oil to find. We wouldn't be chasing Canadian tar sands, and we didn't chase Canadian tar sands for the enormous costs and the destruction done to the environment and the use of natural gas, etc., had we not been running out of oil as a species. No animal anywhere chooses to go hunt or expend energy to get a meal when it's got one laying right at its feet. That's of course proof that that the world is starting to run short of oil. And it's a mathematical certainty, as I demonstrate in my book, that no matter how much money we throw at it, Canadian tar sands production will never top 3.5 million barrels a day, which sounds like a lot of oil, but it's not, because the U.S. is consuming 22 million barrels a day of oil in the wake of a global 9% decline rate for all other oils. So tar sands is a stopgap measure, and that's the only thing it should be viewed as. The world is now using 6 barrels of oil for every barrel it finds of new oil. We need to find 3 new Saudi Arabias to offset decline. And if you think of Saudi Arabia as an Olympic-sized swimming pool, what we're doing now is we're chasing hot tubs full of oil that are increasingly expensive to get out of the ground and use.
People are always talking about different energy sources. I mean, there's coal, for instance, but there are no solutions as far as finding energy.
No, there aren't, and that's a big if that I catch people on when I'm out doing public appearances, and they say, if we find, I say, wait a minute, you just can't assume that if and move on. There is no energy source that will replace this. And major experts like Professor David Goodstein of Caltech and Robert Hirsch, who did a commission study for the U.S. government in 2005, said even if, I hate that word, you had one, it would take 30 years to change the energy infrastructure to reflect that, and we have waited, by all accounts, until the last minute and done nothing, which means basically we're screwed.
As you've explained, the U.S. government, they do have a plan for dealing with it, and it seems to involve basically going to war.
And this was thoroughly described in my first book, Crossing the Rubicon, which is in the Harvard Business School Library. It sold about 100,000 copies worldwide. It's widely respected. Much bigger than the current book. The new book is short and easy read. I encourage everybody to get it. But it's clear that the United States invaded Iraq for oil. There is no question. In my book, I have quotes from Dick Cheney, John McCain, George W. Bush, all admitting that. And still, that's not an answer, because there may be 100 billion barrels of oil in Iraq that might be fairly easy to recover. But when you stack that up against the fact that the planet is using a billion barrels of oil every 11 to 12 days, that really isn't that much oil.